According to research gathered by Inmates to Entrepreneurs, formerly incarcerated individuals are approximately 41% more likely to become self-employed entrepreneurs compared to a similar never incarcerated individuals. Another study showed around 24% of individuals with criminal records reported being self-employed business owners. An estimate of around 4% of all small business owners in the U.S. have criminal histories. This is approximately 1.1 million business owners with criminal histories. This is Kristen Shook with the Reentry Reframed podcast. Today, I have a special guest, Heather Graves. Heather, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I don't want to get too far into her story and where she's at now, but she is an amazing entrepreneur here in the Topeka area and owner operator of Onyx Salon and Onyx Wellness Cafe. And this is another one of those episodes where it's my first time having a real conversation with her. We have obviously supported each other in all of our endeavors and ran into each other a few times here and there in Topeka and being active. So this is going to be a fun one. Heather, can you start us off by just giving me a bit of your background? Where are you from?
I grew up in South Central California. All my family lives in San Diego, but my dad was sent to a military base in the desert to do work on a top secret project. So I didn't even really know exactly what my dad did until I was 16 when his project was released. But military family, my dad's retired from the military. Every man in my family is in the military. My mom worked for the government. So she was a military brat, you know. So yeah, grew up in a smaller town, South Central California.
Do you have siblings?
I do. So I have the typical California household. I have a half brother and a half sister. My brother is from my mom's prior marriage and my sister's from my dad's prior marriage. And then I am their child.
How was life like growing up with your parents and your dad being in the military and everything like that?
So my dad was mostly in the reserves by the time I was born. So my siblings are 6 and 8 years older than me. So there's kind of a pretty big age gap. For a long time, I tried to be older than I was, you know, keep up with them because I thought they were pretty cool. My mom worked a lot. My dad worked a lot. He was always flying back to DC. There was one point in his career where he flew to LA every single day for his job. So, you know, my dad was gone quite a bit just with working, even though he wasn't in the active duty.
What about school and everything? Did you go to just public school? Like, how was that?
Yeah, I went to public school. I stayed in, you know, basically it was a pretty small town. The only thing that was hard is that it was a military town. And so even though I didn't move around, every 3 years, kind of your friends rotated in and out, which, you know, was good for social skills, but kind of hard, you know, to constantly be losing friendships and things like that. I mean, my education was pretty good. I definitely look back and realize I was not challenging myself at all academically, but I was off and on a good student without much effort. So,
do you think that having your parents kind of present but not present had an impact on your childhood?
You know, I would say what impacted my childhood most was probably my childhood obesity, to be honest, which caused me to have a lot of depression. And I mean, I think that my parents having to travel, my dad had to travel for work a lot. Like I said, all of my family was in San Diego. And so my mom kind of held down the fort on her own because my dad would be away at work. And so she also worked full time. And, you know, ran us here, there, and everywhere and tried to have us involved in things. But it's hard. It's hard trying to do that without a family to be able to just come and run your kids here and there and check in on them. And my brother was my main babysitter, which was kind of torturous. Yeah, you know how it is. Brother and sister, you know, so.
Yeah, I have 3 younger sisters, but then I also have a little brother now, so. He's about to be 5 years old and kids.
Yeah. Well, you know, it just, we fought a lot, and he definitely had the upper hand being 6 years older than me.
Yeah.
So it just, you know.
Were you involved in sports or any extracurriculars?
Yeah. So I actually played baseball in an all boys league because my mom had to run us everywhere and my brother played baseball. So it was easier for her to just take both kids to the baseball field rather than splitting us up. And my brother joined the military when I was 13, and then I switched to softball.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
I feel like it was tactical on my mom's part, but it was great. I loved being the only girl on an all-boys league. So. Oh,
did you beat him?
Oh, yeah. I was a pitcher, actually. Oh. My brother was a pitcher, so it was like baseball boot camp all the time with him. I was pretty darn good.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's
yeah, fun. It was pretty cool.
So you mentioned your childhood obesity. About how old were you when those things kind of started having an actual impact on you?
Well, I remember being 9 and getting a physical and seeing like that the doctor wrote overweight on the form. And I think it's no secret that Southern California has a pretty strict or high judgmental level on appearances. I mean, it's kind of the creator of the appearance-based everything, you know, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. So it was hard, you know what I mean? And I didn't know how to make good choices for myself. And I mean, my parents had both struggled with it as well too. So it just caused a lot of depression for me, a lot of lack of self-love, lack of self-worth, which leads to self-harm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
what age were you around these times?
So I had my first cigarette when I was 9 years old, mm-hmm. which is crazy.
Yeah.
When you think like for the time I grew up in, you know, but I was just trying to keep up with my older siblings and they smoked and, you know, I thought it'd be cool to do what they did. And I know.
Did your parents like know? Did they care?
They did not know. My parents are so strict. They are so strict. Absolutely not. Hmm. You know, no way. They run a tight ship.
Okay.
So they have 3 rebellious children. Yeah.
Huh. Was it like because of how tight they try to run their ship?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. I try to be mindful of that. With raising my son now, you know, I like to run a tight ship, but I also give flexibility for self, transparency, vulnerability.
Yeah. And so what kind of happened after all of that? Like once you graduated high school and everything, did you complete high school there?
Yes, I did. But my story started a little before then.
Yeah.
So like middle school, I was getting bullied a lot for being overweight. And so I kind of linked up with the bad girls club because they didn't bully me, honestly. And they were all smoking weed and drinking. And so at like 12, I was smoking weed and drinking at school, wherever, anywhere. And people kind of quit messing with me because I was, you know, hanging out with those people. And it just kind of, I don't know, gave a false idea of solidarity or people that aren't going to pick on me or these kind of people, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but I definitely started to fall in love with the escapism of it all. And, you know, when you're depressed and you don't feel like you can get out from it, running away into substance abuse is always enticing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
How did that impact your school time?
So I managed it all pretty well-ish through middle school. And then, I mean, I was on the honor roll, even though I was kind of doing that stuff. And then in high school, my first couple years were pretty good. You know, I always liked kind of bending the rules a little bit. It was something I could control. You know what I mean? Like anything you can control when you don't have a lot of control, you try to. And, you know, as a child, you don't feel like you have any control. And I didn't have control over my weight. I didn't have control over my feelings, my emotions. So anything I could do. I was really involved in theater, and that really kept me out of trouble in the beginning. But then when I was 16, I met a girl, and she and I became really close friends. And she told me, you know, Heather, my mom and I, and her mom is like somebody that I respected. Like, I love her mom. My parents loved her mom. And if my parents love somebody, they're pretty conservative people. So they've got to be a great person. She's like, Heather, you know, you can lose weight if you do meth, which sounds crazy, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds crazy. But I thought, okay, well, I can control this, right? I'm going to control how I do it. And I like made a little plan, and I would only do it every other day. And then I'd go to the gym on the off days, and, you know, I was not going to be like everybody else because, you know, we all had DARE, you know, so yeah. We had an idea of what these things were like.
How old were you then?
16.
And how did that end up playing out?
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. I kept it up for a while, a little while, and still had, you know, decent grades, whatever, but it slowly crumbled and fell apart. There's that time where you just cross the line of how much you use and you just chase it.
Do you remember that moment?
Uh-huh.
You want to share it?
I smoked more than I'd ever smoked before, and I stared at the wall for hours, and
How old were you?
I was probably 17 at that point.
And when did you realize that it had taken a hold of you and that it was going to end up being a problem? Was that later on?
I mean, I think you always think you have control to a degree. I will say the time that I knew for sure it had a hold on me and I had no options. You know, my parents had finally, I had by this point graduated high school, and my dad was like, you've got to go. You got to go. You can't stay here anymore. Like, my disrespect was next level. And I think he knew something was going on, and he just put his foot down and said, you have to get out. And so I was homeless, living in my car. I didn't even think that that was bad. I'm like, oh, I can live like this, staying on people's couches, staying in abandoned trailers, living in my car.
Fresh out of high school.
Yeah, fresh out of high school. No big deal, because, you know, I thought I was cool. I was running the streets. I had my crew, you know. It wasn't until somebody stole my car that I was living in. A guy I was dating stole my car. That's when I realized that I got to fix some stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this is not good. I got to figure out how to get back home and how to go to rehab. Like, I hit my absolute rock bottom.
So what kind of things were you involved in during that time, just briefly, that ended up bringing it to this point?
Well, I had my moment where I got far too high, and then I just kind of started chasing it. And my girlfriend that kind of got me into it, she was chasing it too. She started dating a really big dealer. And so I was a hauler. So I would haul kilos of drugs around Southern California. And I had a very, very high drug habit, like $200 a day drug habit. It was crazy. I had nothing. Like, how could I even near afford this habit? But, you know, you build this little society, and, you know, you all help each other out, and you scrape by and survive off nothing, but you make it. And when the walls of your group start to crumble, you really start to see, like, the truth behind it all, the falseness behind it all. It's all fine if everybody's high, but if everybody's searching, or if you don't have, you know, what people are hanging around for, it gets to be a really lonely place.
So when your car ended up getting stolen, like, yeah. Have you ever, during all of that time, were you ever in trouble, like, criminally? Like, did you ever get
caught? Not at that point yet.
Wow.
So I actually, I was texting my best friend from high school last night to try and get some facts straight. Because, you know, a lot of this was a while ago, and I've kind of kept a lot of this to myself because I've had a lot of judgment with sharing my story in the past. And so, you know, I'll have 21 years sober this August. So yay. I feel like there's enough time behind me now that people will understand that I am a different person and I do want my story to help others. But anyways, there was a police officer in our town, and he came over to my house a handful of times, knock on my door. I'm terrified. And this was back when I was still living with my parents before I was kicked out. And he would say, Heather, you need to get it together. I don't want to take you to jail. You need to get out of this town and get your life together. And same thing, I'm at a house and something's happening. And he would look at me and he'd go, you need to leave. Leave. You can have a future. And I do remember I finally got arrested after my first time in rehab. So I went to rehab after I showed up at my parents' house. I tried doing the homeless thing without a car for a while. And we were driving around looking for it for days. And I was staying on people's couches. And I just was defeated. And I knew it was time to try and go home. And I showed up. My mom figured out how to get me in an outpatient program through the military. This was all so foreign. My mom had no clue I was on drugs, mind you.
Wow.
I was homeless, living out of my car. She's a very innocent person. You know, she never did drugs in the 70s. She didn't know the signs. You know what I mean? And my dad had some suspicions because I was hanging out with my sister. My sister is an addict as well. And so he was kind of hip to what was going on. But she, fish out of water, found me a rehab program to help me try and get through that. And it worked for a bit. But, you know, I missed my friends, quote unquote, friends. And I thought, you know, I'm strong. I can, you know, still hang out with my friends and stay sober. And I think it lasted a few weeks. I think I maybe had my 1 month NA chip or something by the time I was back at it.
Back at it again.
Back at it. I mean, a lot of just sad, terrible, crazy things happen when you're living that life. And I wound up being at a house that got raided, and Officer Maroney was not there to save me. And I was the one to open the door. I was trying to leave, and the house was surrounded by police. And they asked me if this guy was in there. You're loyal, so you lie. And he wound up giving himself up, and so they tackled me and said, we don't like it when you lie to the cops. You're going to jail. And so I was arrested for obstruction of justice and under the influence of a controlled substance.
How did that end up playing out?
I'm telling you, I look back and I'm like, oh gosh. I'm like, this is nothing. You know, take my little photos for my mug shots, you know, give them my whatever. I mean, I just still thought I was hot stuff, untouchable. It didn't really faze me. I was in a space. I'd been through enough things. You know, I've been living in abandoned trailers, living homeless. I mean, my mental state is this is what you do. You live in and out of jail. No big deal, right? I never thought I'd even make it to my 25th birthday. My dad used to cry every year on my birthday because he thought I would never see another one. I just was hard and fast crazy. The crazier, the more likely it was I would do it. And so it didn't really faze me. I kind of thought I had a leg up. I knew the only women's jail was an hour and a half transport away. So I told them I had asthma, and if they didn't have an inhaler, they couldn't transport me. And they couldn't.
Wow.
So I thought I knew my stuff. I did. So they had to, you know, I gave them a drug test, which we all knew how that was going to shake out. And they, you know, let me go with a ticket for a court appearance and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And crazy as it is, that morning I don't think they have it here, but in California, when you get a speeding ticket, you have to go to adult driver school, to get your ticket taken off your driving record or whatever. So I had driving school in the morning because I had gotten a speeding ticket. Shocker. And Officer Lovett was the school police officer, the DARE officer, you know, my parents' friend, right? And he was teaching driving school. And I was present and well the first half, you know, because I was high, so I was alert. And then we had our lunch break. I overslept. I came in late, and I just, like, showed up and was, like, crying. And I showed him my ticket, and I told him what was going on. And I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this. I don't want to tell my parents. My parents are very, you know, they don't understand that life at all. They're not those kind of people. And you don't ever want to disappoint your parents. And so he told me kind of what to do to try and fight it and how to show up. Like, I was just so lost in this world. And I had just turned 18 right before I got arrested that, you know how that goes. I thought I was slick, but, you know, I started to really kind of see some of the consequences of, like, can I turn this around or am I just going to dig my hole deeper? And so I wound up finally being able to start cosmetology school. So this is like, they kind of happened back to back. Like, I was registered to start cosmetology school. And before I start, that was going to be my out. Mm-hmm. Like, I was going to leave these friends. I was going to leave this life. And I was going to move to Orange County for beauty school. But I couldn't start until I was 18. And I was one of those kids that graduated at 17. On the honor roll, by the way, with 20% attendance. My mom was, my mom's quote for me, I don't know whether to be pissed or impressed. And I feel like I say it to my son a lot too now. Anyways, I was like, gosh, I'm going to get arrested like right before. Like, I'm telling you, I got arrested in January. I started beauty school in February. Like, I just could see my new life right in front of me. And I brought my old life along.
What happened?
So I had to show up for court after I started beauty school. I had to drive back from Orange County to the desert. And the DA really wanted, he had it out for me bad. I tried calling him and chatting with him before, like, driving down there. I did, you know, took the advice of Officer Lovett. And like I said, my sister was a user as well. And he literally said, if I can't get your sister, I'm going to get you. You know, like, it was personal to him. But I showed up to court and the judge was like, it's her first offense. She's going to go on. It's called PC-1000. Have you heard of that? You guys don't have it here. So basically, it is court-ordered rehab and you have to drug test every week. So you have to do a bunch of NA meetings, you know, all that kind of stuff, and get your card stamped and go before the judge and prove that you're rehabilitated. And I think you have a year to complete it.
How did it go for you?
Well, I mean, I graduated the program. but unfortunately, you know, I started beauty school and I loved it and was a great passion. And I was sober for a while, you know, moving to the new town, moving to the new city. And I went to this court date and I got all everything I need to do. And I had to go to NA meetings, AA meetings, whatever. And so I went to meetings and I met people like me. So I wound up going to a meeting and I met a man who was far too old to be dating a 18-year-old. So I went to, you know, NA meetings and met people like me. And I eventually went to an NA meeting. I think it was the only one that worked with my school schedule. And I met this man who was far too old to be dating me. I think he was 32 and I was 18. And, you know, he showed interest in me. You got to remember, my self-esteem is like negative, you know, even though I've lost weight, of course, because, you know, I haven't eaten for a couple of years. I'm still broken, you know, 120% broken, you know. And anybody who's willing to show me some kind of love, you know, you just don't see it when you're young. And, you know, he talked a big talk about sobriety being important to him. And I thought, man, you know, this guy's great. He's going to be really good for me. Until, you know, he moved in straight away and we relapsed together. And I was hardly going to beauty school, hardly showing up, high all the time. My meetings for rehab started and, you know, I knew how long meth stayed in your system. So I'd be high all week and clean for 2 days and high all week and clean for 2 days and manage to keep it up enough to graduate. And I had a judge stand up and applaud me for graduating, and I didn't deserve any of it. Wound up bendering with him quite a bit. He was extremely abusive. And, you know, off and on, very tumultuous relationship, scary, tumultuous. And I found out I was pregnant. And so, that is when I officially woke up. I was right around my 19th birthday. I was pregnant and sober. And I was like, I've got to get out of this situation. Like, he was still abusive to me even though I was pregnant. And he was using drugs even though he said he was, you know, going to be sober. And so I called my parents. And I was like, okay, here's the deal. Here's the truth about everything. Again, yet again, I was using, he's a user, I'm pregnant, I need out. Mind you, any time that I had been sober, you know, my mom did the right thing. She got me into counseling, went to a psychiatrist. So I had medicine for depression. And it was probably fairly stronger than I ever needed because I was coming off of benders whenever I had it. So I got pregnant and I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to take my medicine, get my head right. You know, I'm going to be a mom. Like, this is not, I'm not living for me anymore. I'm living for something bigger because I didn't have the self-love to live for myself at all. And I got out of there. My parents picked me up, took me back home. We had to move all of my stuff out of the apartment, like in a flat. I literally had to have people stand guard because he was so physically abusive to help move me out. I went to my first appointment and my doctor said, Heather, you've been taking this medicine? And I said, yeah, you know, I'm trying to do everything right. She said, I don't know how to tell you this, but it's more than likely that your baby would be born without a head or extremely deformed. Like, you can't take this medication when you're pregnant. So you need to go and have an abortion. So that was, I mean, I'm at the low of low. I've got my one reason for living. Mm-hmm. And I have to walk, you know, go to Planned Parenthood, have my mom take me, my sweet little innocent mom. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I will never understand why people stand outside of those clinics and picket, because some people are there because of deformities, but they don't have the insurance to afford, or their hospital doesn't support, and Planned Parenthood is where they can have a DNC or an abortion or whatever you want to call it. And there were people out there picketing, yelling at me, calling me names. That was so hard, so hard. So my reason for living, you know, was gone, but I was still woke. That baby saved my life. I didn't get to live, but it saved my life. And I found another school, another beauty school. I was going to the Paul Mitchell School. And at that time, it had two locations, one in Costa Mesa and one in Utah. So I moved to Utah.
Wow.
By myself, newly sober. And I think it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, honestly. You know, just surrounded by a lot of pure people, like very pure, like I had an adjustment, but it was a good adjustment. You know, you almost kind of need that. And I was far away from anybody who knew me or knew my story or that was an addict. So that kind of was the turning point for me.
Well, I'm definitely sorry that you had to go through all those things to get to where you are today. You know, just something that I can't even imagine, but I'm glad that you are here today.
Me too.
Because, goodness. So how did things pan out once you got to this other beauty school? Did you end up doing more rehab or?
So no, I just kind of escaped. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of tried my best to escape. My ex was still, no matter how many times I changed my phone number, he'd find it. He was definitely still present, or wanted me to know that he would have some type of control over me. I was pretty scared that he might come there, but he luckily didn't. What I did find is that I got in trouble in Utah. Mm. Because I hung out with the fringe kids because it was extremely conservative there. So in the Mormon religion, you know, they have what's called Jack Mormon, like the people that leave the Mormon religion. And one day they're just drinking, and that was like my vibe. I just wanted to smoke some cigarettes and drink some alcohol, like keep it low key. I was not crossing the line, but I still, you know, needed to escape to a degree. And one second your friends are doing that, and the next they're like doing hard drugs. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't hang out with you, because they were where I was, you know what I mean, when I was 16.
Aww.
And it was just like this fast fade for each of them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like it was just too much. But I did get in trouble in Utah. I had people at my house drinking, were underage. And so I got it's a misdemeanor to be underage drinking alcohol in your house in California. You wouldn't really get a ticket for that, but it is, you know, got in trouble again. Poor little mom had to drive me back to Utah to go to court for that. My poor parents, you know, I think like they tried so hard to, you know, be so regimented and straight and narrow. And well, they're okay with how I turned out now, but it was a really tough go for them for a while. But eventually I wound up leaving Utah because it was just that same circular pattern of making friends that were kind of just not great.
But you never went back all the way, right? Back into using and everything?
No, okay. Never. Nope. Okay. I have never touched meth a day after I found out I was pregnant. That baby surely did save my life. I definitely, it's still a journey to find the reasons to live.
Yeah.
The reasons to love yourself, the reasons to show up for yourself. I wound up moving. They opened a beauty school in San Diego, which is where all my family is, aside from my parents and my brother. My brother's girlfriend at the time called me and was like, come out here. My brother said I could live with him while I finished beauty school. Like, let's just get this done. 3 beauty schools.
I got it done.
Yeah. Yeah. And while I was there, I started therapy. And I went through cognitive behavioral therapy. And I will tell you, that saved my life as well. I mean, that taught me to love myself, to change my frame of thinking, to try and flip to positive instead of negative, to not be the victim, to, you know, take my power back, take my control back. And, you know, mind you, I got into all of this to lose weight, right? And what happens? You know, you gain it all back and then some in sobriety. And that's hard. That's very hard. But it wasn't worth using again. Like, I definitely saw that. I didn't see the greatness that could come, but I saw that I did not want to go back to that. I mean, that is a dark, empty, empty life. And I started going through the program, the behavioral therapy, and then I started eating healthy, and I started exercising, working with a trainer, and I just started discovering me. So I lost 140 pounds. The right way.
Right. How old were you during this time?
So I turned 21 when I started my, 19 to 21 was just sobering up, like getting off drugs, but still not self-loving. 21, I started eating right, exercising, investing in myself, and like truly discovering loving myself and my life and the opportunity of life and the gift of life, you know, things I just never saw before.
So I do have one question. Did you always want to do something within the beauty industry, or is that something that you just had fallen into?
I always wanted to do hair. So I didn't even see it as a career, but I always did all my friends' hair. I always was doing my own hair. Like, my parents banned me from coloring hair in the house back when I was in high school because I was like wrecking their bathroom. So they would pull up and I'd be hosing somebody's hair color out in the front yard or cutting people's hair outside. Like, I always just loved to do it. I loved creating it. I just never even like saw it as a career. My parents were pretty college driven. And so I just was always, you know, that's the path. And one of my friends was like, why don't you go to cosmetology school? And I'm like, huh, that would be pretty amazing. Cause like, I do love doing hair. And so Yeah.
And you finally got it done.
I finally got it done. It was like the longest, I think, 2.5 years. It's supposed to be like a 1 year thing.
Well, you've gone through a lot in a little bit of time.
Right.
So what happened once you did complete the school?
So when I graduated from cosmetology school, or even a little before then, I wanted to work at the top salon in San Diego, period. I just was like delusionally wouldn't take no for an answer. I always used to joke with my old boss, because I did get the job there, but I always joked that he would probably think that I would sleep outside on the bench if he didn't hire me. Like, I was just that, like, hi, I'm graduating in a couple months. I want to work here. And they're like, okay. I'm like, hi, I'm graduating next month. Can I fill out an application? Because I want to work here. I literally got my license, like passed my test, and called them immediately. But there was a little bit of daunting over my head, because when I got my license, or where I passed my test, I got a letter in the mail asking me all these questions in order to issue my state licensing. And that was, have you ever been convicted of a crime or a felony? And so I had to write an essay to the state of California begging for them to let me have my license to do hair, explaining how I'm reformed and, you know, what I did to get in trouble. And that was really gut-wrenching, like, because at this point I have a lot of sobriety under my belt. I'm starting to, you know, have a little bit more desire for self. And I'm like, man, I might have just ruined everything for myself. Luckily, they gave me grace and said, we just are going to need you to check in every year while you're, because I was still on probation, 5 years of probation.
And we didn't cover that. So what was the conviction?
So it was basically in that PC-1000 program, okay. You're kind of convicted of a felony.
Okay.
So I was a felon. But if I completed that program and then completed my 5 years of probation, they would expunge it.
Okay.
So it's a dismissed felony.
Maybe
it's not gone. It's just a dismissed felony.
Okay.
So when I got my license, I was, what, like 2.5 years sober. So I still was halfway through. So every year that I was on probation, I had to write the state of Kansas and kind of do a check-in, see if I could keep my career.
The state of Kansas?
Or sorry, okay. State of California.
Yeah, I was just like, let me double check.
I've been here 14 years now. It's yeah. Easy to, the state of California. Oh. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool that they allowed that. But yeah. Huh. When did you get to work at that place? Was it like right out, or did you have to get some practice and then go try again?
So at that place, you're basically an assistant. You don't just start doing hair. Mm-hmm. So I got to work there straight out of beauty school. The average person assists 2 years there. And I just, man, so dedicated. I was able to graduate the program in like a year and a half. And mind you, this is like a few months into starting. I start my weight loss journey. Like, I'm just like taking power, taking control, coming into myself this whole time. It's a very, very strict salon, very regimented. It's what I needed at the time, honestly. And I was trained by like literally, I'm so blessed. He was like the creative director for Vidal Sassoon, which Vidal Sassoon is who invented haircutting. He was a hairdresser in London, traveled all around, opened many of their salons for them, and then decided to open his own in San Diego. And so amazing, immense training. Then he trained me to become an educator. So yeah, I mean, I just, I'm so grateful. I'm so lucky to have had that amazing education. So I know.
Wow.
I know.
It's just so wild.
Yeah. From abandoned trailers to the top salon in the United States.
That's amazing. Great job.
Crazy.
Goodness. So where did life take you there? And how did you end up getting to Topeka and all of that good stuff?
So when I worked at the salon in San Diego, he wound up being my husband. The UPS man for my salon asked me out like every day for 6 months. And we started dating. He was significantly older than me. He was 40 and I was 21. But you have to understand like where we were at on this journey. I was partway through my weight loss. He had started asking me out before I had lost any weight. I'm very emotionally vulnerable, you know, and, you know, I felt like, okay, this guy actually liked me for me, not just like superficial. And that kind of means something to you because sometimes in California, a lot of things can be superficial. And so I think I emotionally misjudged that situation. But so we were in a long relationship. We wound up getting married and it was just a lot of, he was definitely manipulative. You know, he was whatever I wanted him to be and then himself. And then when I would be like, oh, I don't know. And it was just a lot of back and forth. And I needed to get away from that relationship. And so I did. I left him. I got an apartment that I could barely afford. And I just remember sleeping on the floor in there because I didn't have any furniture, no money for furniture. And I felt like this is freedom and it's worth it. And so I got somebody to move in with me. We lived there for a while and things were good, but it was so uncomfortable. You have to understand this man came into my salon every day. I saw him on the streets. Like, even though San Diego is a big place, I worked in like the Arts District area. And so it's like this little borough. It's like this little neighborhood. Everybody knows him. Everybody knows me. We all know each other, you know. We take our lunch breaks at the same restaurants. All my clients are on the block. You know what I mean? It was uncomfortable. And he definitely crossed the line with some of his behavior. And I just needed out. And my old boss, so great. My mentor, he's like, we're opening a second location. I'm going to move you there. I'll have you as a senior stylist. It's going to be fine. And so I was just kind of trying to wait it out to get through that because it was just really uncomfortable, like bad. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, this guy added me on Facebook and I messaged him. I'm like, listen, if you try and talk to me at all in that way, like I will delete you. We can be friendly. We can politic, but that's it. And he eventually wound up coming out to meet me and he's from Topeka, Kansas. It's funny. I was listening to the podcast. No, not this last one, but the one before where the guy's like, he was engaged like a billion times. I've been engaged 7 times.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
So I love love. It's just kind of, I'm very in the moment sometimes, you know, I get swept up and like, what's time? And, you know, I'm still like a California free spirit at heart, you know? So I'm like, oh man, sure. I'll move to Topeka. Like, whatever. He wanted to move to Arizona. I wanted to move to Arizona. My best friend that I lived with in San Diego wanted to move to Arizona. So it seemed great. I'll live in Kansas for a bit. I love traveling and living different places and seeing different places. And then we'll move to Arizona and it'll be great. So moved here for him. Bought a house like straight away because property is so cheap here. And he and I were married for like 5 minutes. I don't even know what that was. That shouldn't even count.
My God, for 5 minutes?
It was more than 5 minutes, but you know, happily married like 2 weeks. Seriously. Anyways, I was just like, I got to get out of here. My girlfriend and I, the girlfriend that I had made here, I was living in her living room. My ex that I moved here for was going to buy my house. And, you know, it was just kind of, I had a 6-month wait for him to save the money for the down payment to, you know what I mean? Do whatever. Mm-hmm. So he was taking care of the mortgage. He was going to buy the house. I already had clients here. I had a clientele. So I told my job, like, hey, my girlfriend and I, we're going to move to Panama. She and I had made this plan. We're going to sell all of our stuff and move to Panama. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be leaving. Like, once he buys a house in 6 months, just so you guys know. And they're like, okay. And so I moved into my girlfriend's living room and she and I just, you know, were single for a very short time until I met my son's dad. I met a guy and we had a connection, but I was still going to move. You know, it's still pretty like, that's okay. Like I'm not going to put my life on hold for love with a guy. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm doing me. And then I found out I was pregnant. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess we're going to stay in Kansas. Because my son's dad has a daughter here whom I love. I'm still very much a part of her life. She's so amazing. But, you know, I couldn't ask him to leave her or break up that family. Like, it's so important for everybody to be present for children. So my life took a different trajectory. No Panama. I became a mom instead. And unfortunately, Brighton's dad and I did not work out. What I needed in a partner as a free-spirited person versus what you need in a partner as a mom is very different. So if I have any bit of advice for you, I didn't ever think I was going to be a mom. But if I have any advice for you, always pick a partner that would be a great parent, because you never know how it's going to shake out. That was a journey, and I'm grateful to have my son, and my son makes me a better person every day. I look back on my life and I'm like, oh my gosh, like everything that my parents had to go through. And I'm so transparent and I'm so honest with my son. Obviously, age appropriate times, but he's 12. And he knows that, you know, I went to jail. I was arrested. He knows that I was an addict. He knows that I was homeless. He knows. And I'm just very open with him because I want him, and I do tell him this, I want you to be able to learn from my mistakes. And he's really strong, like I am, strong of will. And if I can make myself approachable and understanding. You know, I think a lot of the time I hid what was going on from my parents because they just seemed on this pedestal, you know, and I didn't want to disappoint them. And, you know, my son will always go, oh, I don't want to disappoint you. I'm like, you will never disappoint me. Like, life happens. Like, I might get on you about something, but I get it. I 100% get it. Like, we can talk about it. Talk to me about it. Because I think that's the misunderstanding we have as children. We don't want to do wrong. We only want to get the praise. And sometimes you just really need people there to help guide you through those tough times. So my son is amazing. He's, you know, made my life wonderful. And I was back in the dating scene, of course, whatever that is. I wasn't even in the dating scene. I was like fully jaded, ready to be single and just raise my kid. And here comes Pedro. And he's just so diligent. He like messaged me for like months. I mean, we met in person and chatted a few times, but he like messaged me for months. And then he finally, you know, just got to know me like as a friend, which was super cool. And then he kind of made a little, I think he said, wow, where have you been my whole life? And I was like, wait, hold on a second. I thought we were friends. And then he asked me out on a date and I was like, no. And then he's like, well, can we just go to lunch as friends then? And I was like, okay, maybe. And he's so patient and so kind. It's just so hard to be a single mom dating. I just didn't want anybody around my son, you know. It's kind of, you just hear all these crazy stories. And as somebody who's lived the life that I've lived, I definitely just am very apprehensive about things and people that you don't know. And so I met Pedro's entire family in Chicago, like down to the kids, like nieces, nephews. He's a large family. And then I was like, okay, you can meet my son, but like at a public setting, like at a barbecue, and you have to come late and you have to leave early and you have to just pretend like you don't really know me.
He's like, challenge accepted.
Oh, and he's like the best thing that could have ever happened for Brighton. They're both like so similar. It's so cute. I'm so grateful that they have their little relationship. And, you know, he's so good for me too, you know, because he believes in me, which I know that I have a lot of my power and my strength, but sometimes I have a hard time believing in me. And he just like fully thinks I'm Wonder Woman, which is like amazing. It's like the most amazing. Find a partner that thinks you're Wonder Woman. That's it.
Good job, Pedro.
Yeah. Shout out to Pedro. So we started dating. He's like, hey, you're working at a salon. You're training assistants that are then going and working at this salon. Why don't you have your own salon? And I'm like, well, I'm a single mom. You know, I only have my income to provide for me and my son. I'm very risk averse. Because the first half of my life was all risk, all risk. And so I'm like, I'm just going to stay right here and be not very risky with money because, you know, I had none for a long time. And now I'm in the position of being a single mom, which is very tight. So he's like, well, I mean, what would your parameters be? He just starts kind of laying it out. I hear how you talk to people. He's the same. What's a goal? What would make you like reach your goal? Like,
just curious.
What might like push you? What would maybe make you feel comfortable with having your own salon? And I said, well, I would have to own the building and I would have to live above it. And he said, oh, perfect. Let's go to Nodo. And I'm like, oh, I love Nodo. Buildings there for sale? Like, I don't know. I didn't think like this. But, you know, Pedro's the ultimate entrepreneur. So he's like, yeah, they are. Let's go talk to some people. And so I bought my building and just everything was way more than I thought it was going to be. I wound up having to rebuild the entire building, the entire foundation, pull dirt from the flood out of it, like everything. And I was just like, should we just sell it and just call it? But we stuck with it and Onyx was born and I wrote my business plan to be in there by myself just in case because I'm risk averse. I sold my house to live in this, you know, loft and Onyx just flourished amazingly.
So will you tell us what Onyx is for those who may not know?
So what Onyx means or what it is?
Both of them.
Okay. So Onyx is it's a salon and wellness spa and their original location is in Nodo. And the meaning of Onyx is it's a feminine empowerment stone for strength. You carry the Onyx stone with you if you want to release negative energy and feel renewed. And I feel like that's all I ever want my space to be. A place where people can feel renewed, poured into, loved, where women can find their power and their strength. Like I feel like that has been my calling because I had none for so long. I didn't love myself for so long. And like part of my interview process is like, this is like all about love. We lift each other up. We pour into each other. My girls are amazing. They all share each other's posts. Like in our industry, that's so unheard of. It can be so competitive. It can be so dog eat dog. And we're like, no, let's help each other out. Like, oh man, I'm great, but this girl's great. Like everybody is great. We just like love on each other and build each other up. And I'm like, I'm of the philosophy we can all grow together. There is no such thing as competition. Like there is the right amount of people on this earth for the right amount of people that have skills for those people. Like that is the universal law. And I fully believe in that. I've seen it and I've seen so much harshness and so much pettiness that I don't just ever want to have that. I don't want to have it in my space. And, you know, I won't have it in my space. It's just amazing, loving girls. And I love going to work every day. Most of us all hang out together outside of work. Like they are my best friends. So women need that.
Totally.
I mean, everybody needs that, but women for sure need that.
Yeah. And I mean, I have the same thoughts and ideas about like, there is no true reason for competition, especially in like businesses, because my little analogy or whatever you want to call it is, are you going to go eat McDonald's double cheeseburger literally every single day of the week for a month? You know, like there's room for who, like there is so much room for other opportunities and other people to come join us because we can only make each other better.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, there's something for everyone. And at the end of the day, too, I told my girls, like, you all want to have 100% the clientele that speaks you, right? Like, you want to enjoy every client that's in your chair. And so we can happily, willingly, like, share on clients. Like, oh, my gosh, I know that we got our thing going, but this girl over here, like, she next level does what you want, and she's going to kill it.
Yeah.
And or she loves all the same things as you. Like, I think you guys will vibe so well. And like, we do that. And that's great. You want your chair to be full and your day to be full of like what is meant for you.
Right.
You know?
So after you ended up moving to Topeka and you kind of thought about maybe, I mean, you didn't even think about it. You got guided to the idea of having a business and everything like that. During that time, did you ever hold yourself back? Did you ever like question it due to your background? Or at this point, were you already fully ready for moving forward completely?
I feel like I was fully ready for moving forward completely, but I will tell you, it was right after I had opened Onyx, like I had one of these crazy moments. My bank had invited me to the 2030 gala. And so Pedro and I are dressed up, headed to a gala, and we're driving south on the boulevard. And there is a high-speed police chase going north. And they throw out the tack strips and the tire. And I just got goosebumps. And I just had to take a moment. And I got like shaky and teary-eyed. And Pedro's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I used to be in that car going north. And now I'm in this car going south, dressed up, headed to one of the most respectable galas in our town. Like, how pivotal is that? It still blows my mind. I still remember, I keep it present. I keep it in the front of my mind whenever I see people in addiction. I haven't really shared my story very publicly. There's a lot of people I haven't shared my story with, but I have helped intervention clients' children or people that I know that are struggling. I try to help them as best I can to help other people. It's just always been in more of a private setting. I've never forgotten where I've come from. And I always try to be mindful of that. Like sometimes I can hold myself back in ways almost like, I don't know if I should have all that. You know, I don't know if I should. It's hard for me to do for myself. And that's where Pedro's great, because he really steps in and grounds me and reminds me that I do deserve. And I'm not saying I don't have that self-love. I do. It's just, when you've been through having absolutely nothing, it's hard to have so much.
Yeah. And
it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I understand what you're saying, because I mean, I'm the same way. Like, I won't think about doing this or that for myself, but it's not because I'm neglecting, but it's just not a thought. Mm-hmm. But like somebody else, I'm like, yeah, sure, I got you. Like, of course. And so I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, for my son, it would be a heartbeat. For Pedro, it would be a heartbeat. For myself, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need a lot to survive. I really don't. But it's also okay to have. It's right. Okay to have.
Well, and like that's the growth piece, right? And the acceptance of abundance in the good way, and accepting that you are going the right way so that it's okay to have those things. That's, yeah.
It's just that uncomfortable push, you know, but I'm pushing through. I love seeing all of my girls be able to grow and having that empowerment. You know, push them all day to do for themselves and care for themselves.
So one question that kind of ties into just a general conversation. From your perspective, how important is personal care? And how can those who have gone through some of these experiences that you have be impacted by something as normal, as simple as a fresh haircut?
Personal care is like everything, down to like the smallest thing, like whatever you can do for yourself for that moment. It's just so important to pour into yourself. I think caring for yourself by going to the gym or eating healthy, like that's how I really started kind of pouring into myself. It's you taking time for you, for your longevity, for your health, for your ability to feel good while you're here on this earth. And having a haircut is the same. I mean, it's part of your outer facade, but like with my clients, also inner. My clients always joke with me, and how much is the fee for the therapy? You know, like we just love on each other and pour into each other as well. Like my clients I hate even saying clients, you know, they're my people. Mm-hmm. They believe in me and I believe in them. And, you know, we just pour into each other. And there are days where they lift me up and there's days where I lift them up. And gosh, I just love them so much. It's more than a haircut. It's a relationship. It's an experience. And I feel like all of my girls are like similar. They're all talented and trained, and it feels good to look good. But it also feels good to like have a hug from somebody who just cares about you. You know, I have an older client, and she told me, I hug all my clients. Like, I'm just a huggy kind of person. And I was giving her a hug and she started tearing up, and she said, you know, this is the only hug I get all month. And I'm like, gosh, I like uncomfortably hug people. We gotta hug people.
Yeah.
Like, people need to feel connected and loved, mm-hmm. for sure.
What advice do you have for others who may dream of becoming a business owner but are worried about their past history or things like that and how it may impact their possibilities?
The possibilities for life are endless. So long as you, this is one thing my dad taught me. So long as you set a goal and you completely focus on it and you pour your all into it and you make every move towards the success of that goal, it will always be attainable, achievable, and well. And I try to remind myself of that, and I think it's true. If you really focus on something and you pour your energy and efforts, like, it's going to happen. It is going to happen. If you are bound and determined and you're doing all of the right things to put yourself on this path, it will happen.
What advice do you have for those who may be going through addiction and what they may be able to do to take their next step? So another way to ask it is, like, what would you tell your younger self while you were going through all of that now that you're older?
Gosh, that's so hard because I feel like it's so situational, you know? Yeah. If you're using or if you're at chasing, it's not life. It's not living. It's not what it makes itself out to be. It's like a mirage. You think you're going to get through, or this is a great way to live, but it's all just a lie. And I can't believe the amount of abundance that is on the other side of sobriety. I mean, everything in life worth doing has a little bit of a hard part, and it might be a little hard, but you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other until you've reached the other side. And it is so beyond worth it. So beyond worth it to not be in anxiety and at the bottom of a well all the time. It's not living. It's surviving. And living is good. Living is great.
If you could tell your younger self one thing, what would it be?
You are amazing, beautiful, worth it. Just, I don't know. try and love yourself and see all of the good in you.
Is there anything that you want to touch on before we wrap up?
I feel like for anybody that's listening to this, if I can do it, you can do it. I can overcome it. You can overcome it. I had no hope for myself. I had no plan of living. I'm gonna be 40 this year, and I didn't think I was going to make it to 25. Like, it's going to, if you work it, you work hard at it, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. It's going to be more than fine. My life is amazing. Like, I literally sit back in awe of it at all times. There's not a time where I am like, eh. I mean, and I feel like people with addiction, they tend to be kind of more sensitive to the world as it is, which is a great gift when you can get on the other side of that, because you can really, really lift people up and change people in a positive way. I think there's a lot of sensitivity in us with how harsh things can be, like society or in general, or, you know, they do this like dog eat dog, you know, that was kind of like the old school mentality. Like, that's out, man. We're in. We're going to like lift each other up all the way there. Like, I feel like that's our kind of people. And if you're on the right side of sobriety, you can see that. You can see that just pouring into each other and helping each other out and like solidarity and like loving on each other is the answer. We just need to find like that group of people to help you flourish and grow. I think they exist here.
Oh, yeah.
With you guys. Yeah. You guys are pretty great people.
I mean, you too. What does hope mean to you?
Everything. Everything. Hope for anything is everything. I'm probably the most annoyingly optimistic person anybody ever. Like, don't ever come if you just want to complain to me. I am all hope all day. All day. No, it's going to be great. Here's like Pedro. It was before he found out he had COVID, but he was starting to get sick. And I was like, no, you are well. You are feeling good. That is me all day. Hope mantras all day, every day. If something bad happens, that was a blip in the matrix. That is, it's everything.
That's great. I love it. Flip in the matrix.
Yeah, that wasn't supposed to happen. You weren't really believing it.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like that one's a fun one to end on, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm grateful for you for joining me in this part of the matrix. But really, though, I do really appreciate the opportunity to sit down and hear more of your story. I am proud of you for everything that you have been able to accomplish, especially with all of those things that you've gone through. Within those time frames, like, you had lived so many lives in such a short amount of time. And it's amazing to be able to see the other side of that and how much opportunity there is still to live your life, even after everything that you've accomplished so far, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate everything that you do for our community, everything that you do for those that you serve through your business. But I don't even like saying that because I know, like, just I
serve through love.
Yeah,
serve through love.
Serve through love and everything that you do. If anybody would like to say, hey, thanks, how could they tell you that?
I've got the Onyx page.
Okay.
Yeah, the Onyx Facebook or Instagram pages. Awesome. I check them all the time.
Cool. This is Kristen Shook and Heather Graves on the Reentry Reframed podcast. Please let us know what you think. It's always great to hear feedback from the story. Please let Heather know how inspirational her story has been and give her a thank you for sharing it. And go visit her salon so you can get loved on.